A looser muscle moves faster. There's scientific studies on it. I wish we had them on here. But there are, actually. I'm serious. You can Google it. Okay, the other thing is, the quicker you swing, the harder you'll hit the ball.
This is the moment we waited for. Everything you want is right here. We gonna give them what they came for. We gonna take it up from last year. Watch the game change. Watch the game change. Watch the game change. Watch the game change. Yeah.
Okay, so we are back with another episode of the James Igatowicz Show. We're going to get into it, as we always do. We don't really beat around the bush in the beginning. We like to just make it fast. One of the things that I think is coming up a lot, and this podcast is more geared towards 3-0s than 3-5s. If you're above a 3-5, I would hope you're not having this problem. But if you are, then we're going to talk about it. So, I'm seeing a lot of players on their resets pulling up their body and pulling up their head while they hit the reset, especially the mid-court reset. I think there is it's okay to have some movement, when you're resetting at the kitchen. Somebody has a high, you pop up your, let's say you pop up your dink, or your partner pops up your dink. You would never pop up a dink, right? You watch my podcast. You've got good technique. You're not going to pop up a dink. But let's say your partner doesn't watch the James Igatowicz podcast, so they're popping up dinks left and right, and that's not good. So let's say they pop it up. Then if you're resetting at the kitchen and you're in a tough spot, some head movement is okay because it's very quick. You can't really control. You can't have the quietest body ever. It's just a tough situation to be in. So I get it. But if you are resetting in the midcourt, you have a lot of time. Resetting in the midcourt, or like let's say 2 feet in front of the baseline, your opponent is all the way on the other side and they're also past the kitchen line on the other side. You've got a good 15 to 20 feet, probably more than 20 feet actually, to work with. So it's not a lot of time. I'm sure they could be hitting the ball hard at you, but you have enough time so that you don't have to be so wildly moving around with your head. And just like I've said before, I've noticed that as you go down in level, the movement of the head during points goes up in level. I've seen a lot of, and I've been teaching a lot, and so many of the 3-0s are moving their head side to side, or they're pulling up their head like this. I would highly recommend, especially in the transition zone where you want to have as quiet of a body as possible, you're trying to hit a soft, precise shot, I would highly recommend that your head is as still as it can possibly be. And if you've ever watched me play, you know that I'm bouncing up and down for the entire match. I don't teach that. Something's wrong with me. But when I am hitting resets, I am as quiet with my body and my head as possible for the duration of the swing. So I'm bouncing up and down, whatever, the weird stuff that I do, and then somebody hits a ball at me, and while I am contacting that ball, I'm as quiet with my body as possible. I think it's super important, because if you could have, let's say this, you could be Colin Johns. You could have perfect technique on the reset. You could never miss a reset. Now, if I told Colin Johns that every time, or maybe let's say half the time he reset it, he had to do this little body and pull up his head like this, I don't think he would be making all of his resets. Even the best resetter in the world, if you told him that he had to pull up his head, he wouldn't be making all of them. So who are you as a 3-0 to be pulling up your head every reset? It's not a good idea. You have to have a quiet body first because, it's just tough. It's very tough to make these very soft, precise shots off of hard overheads and hard, whatever the case might be, popped up dinks from your partner. It is very tough to be, let's just say, hitting a difficult shot. A reset is not as easy as a dink, I'd rather be pulling up my body or trying to pop up my head while I hit a serve into that big target that is the cross-court box versus trying to hit a reset that's going to, bounce perfectly in the kitchen. Very tough to do with a non-quiet body. So I would say just being as still with your head as possible, I think that actually helps quiet the rest of your body. Focusing on your head, keeping that still, and the rest of your body, at least in my personal experience and when I've been teaching private lessons to players, has helped a ton. Speaking of teaching private lessons to players, I've been doing some of that, and I've been having some great results. I'm kind of surprised at how good of a one-on-one coach I am. No, I'm just kidding. I'm not surprised. No, I'm just kidding. I'm kidding all around. But I am doing private lessons. I'm doing private Zoom lessons a lot more now. So if you're interested in taking private lessons with me, I'm opening up some hours, and I have a few hours left. Obviously, I've got a lot of people looking to do it because there's a lot of people that watch this podcast and hopefully learn something. So I do have some hours open, and the way to reach out to me about those private Zoom lessons, and they're not that cheap. So that's just how it is. But if you do want them and you want to get better, what we do is we go on a Zoom call. These days we're doing 45 minute Zoom call together, and we watch you play together, me and you privately. Or if you want to split the cost with friends, I can watch your group together. That's actually a more cost-effective way to do it. If you and three of your friends who are in your pickleball doubles group together want to have me watch you play while we all get on a Zoom call together, and I will tell you what you're doing right and what you're doing wrong, that's a way more cost-effective way to split the cost of the Zoom 45 minutes with me. And we have some fun, and I try to help you guys out and make you guys better. And yeah, I've found that if you do that once a week or so, you get better, because I'm pretty good at, I think I'm a decent coach. I'll give myself that. I feel bad. I've been talking up my coaching abilities this entire time, but I've definitely helped a lot of people. I'm getting some testimonials actually on my website. Hopefully my guy, one of the best players I've ever taught, actually, Ryan Millman, he got way better with me. I got to get him to do a testimonial for me. I don't even think he watches my podcast, so it's kind of a wasted shout out. I'll probably screen record this and then send it to him. So just make myself feel better. Okay. Sorry. Got to get back to the topics. Okay. One thing that I think is hugely important is, and this is another thing, 3-0 specific, probably 3-5 specific, you ideally would not be seeing this too much at the higher levels, slicing the volley. You do not want to be slicing your volleys in pickleball. The reason you don't want to be slicing your volleys in pickleball is because if you slice the volley, there is a limit to how hard you can hit that volley, because slice is backspin, and backspin has a tendency to go up and stay in the air longer. That's why if I wanted to hit the ball, let's think about it this way. If you want to hit the ball as far as you possibly could, if my life was on the line and I said, I need to hit this ball as far as possible, I would hit that ball with slice, because slice will be in the air for longer and it will coast more. Topspin will go down. That's why if you want to hit a speed up that stays in, you do it with topspin and not slice. That's why there's no such thing as a slice speed up. Same reason why you should not be slicing your volleys. If you slice your volleys, there's a very good chance they're going to go long. All right, so now I'm here to talk to you guys about Selkirk backpacks. I probably shouldn't have to talk to you about them. I mean, you see them, you know, it's enough of an ad to see them at all these tournaments. I mean, it seems like everybody's got one, and I actually think they're the best. You know, I'm always begging Rob to send me more. I've got like 4 or 5 backpacks. They last so long too. I think the biggest thing about Selkirk backpacks is that they're really durable, especially with me. I mean, I'm putting as many paddles as possible in the backpacks. I've got gallons of coffee in the backpacks, sweaty shirts. I've done everything possible that you shouldn't do to a backpack to a Selkirk backpack, and I've had it now for 2 years. So I'm a huge proponent of the Selkirk backpacks. I think the tour line ones especially are very good. They look cool. They look sleek. I personally like the black ones. I'm known to bring 2 of them on court every match. So yeah, these are just my personal opinions on the Selkirk backpacks. I also think the team line is good. And yeah, I think if you want one, get one, because they're going to last you quite a while. And they also look pretty cool. And they don't necessarily just look like a pickleball backpack either. I mean, I can wear them pretty much and bring them wherever, and it doesn't really, you know, it kind of just fits in with any other backpack that you would have. So, especially because with a slice, you have an open paddle face. With an open paddle face to the sky, the harder the ball comes to you, the more likely that ball is to pop up. So we don't need to get into the technicals of why you shouldn't slice. I'm sure that there's a good chance you probably know you shouldn't be slicing your volleys. We're just going to tell you how to stop. There's 2 reasons people slice their volleys, at least from in what's been my personal experience. Let alone if you're a tennis player, if you come from a tennis background, of course, you start learning, you know, you slice volleys your whole life in tennis. So we're just going to teach you how to not. The 2 other reasons, outside of being a tennis player, obviously, is players are too tense with their arm. You do not want to be tense with your arm when you are volleying the ball. And this is the most, I think, undertaught thing in pickleball, is that on your volleys or your counters, you should be as loose as possible. If you watch the top pros, our arms are extremely loose when we're hitting volleys. We are not rigid. When I am volleying, And volleying is probably the best part of my game, maybe. Countering is, maybe. When I'm doing it, I'm as loose as possible with my arm. It's like my arm is a noodle, and it just goes to where it goes. You do not want to be rigid, because the more tense you are with your volley, two things. The slower your arm moves, right? So if you want to do this demonstration, we'll do it. Get in a ready position. Try to move your arm quickly as you possibly can, side to side, and do it with as tense of an arm as possible. Be as tense with your arm as possible. Guess what? It's not going to move that fast. The looser you are, the more quickly it moves. So that's what you do. You want to be as loose as possible so that your arm reacts and moves quickly as possible. A looser muscle moves faster. There's scientific studies on it. I wish we had them on here. But there are actually. I'm serious. You can Google it. Okay, the other thing is, the quicker you swing, the harder you'll hit the ball. It's a pickleball. It's a very light wiffle ball thing. If you try to muscle it, that is not how you hit it hard. What you do is you just swing as fast as you can. Swing as fast as you can. And if anybody knows how to hit hard volleys, it's me. It's like the one thing I'm good at in pickleball. I don't even, you know, the other stuff, I can serve and I can hit volleys hard. And I'm telling you, you just swing as fast as you can. That's all you do. You don't try to muscle it and swing it hard. You kind of treat it, it's kind of the same as a throw. If you wanted to throw a ball as far as you could, you would be super loose and you just throw it. Same exact type of thing. You wouldn't muscle the throw, you know, that's not how you throw a ball as far as you can. If you watch like a pitcher in baseball, they're very loose when they throw. Same thing with a football player that's, you know, a quarterback that's throwing a pass. Same thing with your volleys. You want to be super loose, okay? So if you are slicing your volley, it's probably a product of you being too tense with your arm. Because if you're tense with your arm, you have more of a tendency to kind of just chop at it. So you should be very loose. And then the other reason why people slice their volleys is they contact the ball too close to their body. If you contact the ball close to your body, there is a very high likelihood that you will do this, the closer you are to your body. The farther away from your body, i.e. more in front you are with your contact point, the more likely it is to go down. See where my hand is? And you can actually do this with your paddle at home. You can extend on your backhand volley as far as possible, and you'll notice that the trajectory of your paddle is most likely pointing more downward, closed to the ground. And if it's pointing downward, it's got a closed paddle face to the ground, you can't slice it. The slice comes from having an open paddle face up to the sky. And here's another thing. Bring the paddle now, bring it right to your chest, and you'll notice more likely to be pointing upward. That's kind of just how the trajectory of the paddle works on the one-handed backhand counter. And to be clear, when we talk about slicing the volley, we're really only talking about the one-handed backhand volley here, within the forehand, obviously. The two-handed backhand volley, almost nobody slices that one. If you're slicing your two-handed backhand volley, you might have to sign up for a private lesson with me. That's a big problem. Just kidding. I'm actually not kidding. You know, yeah, if you want to sign up, you can. Okay. Anyway, so those are the main things here. Close to your body and too rigid. Those are the two reasons why people slice their volleys. So I would say this is actually a prescription for almost anybody, though, that for the most part, the more in front you contact the ball and the looser you are with your arm, the better your counters tend to be. If you watch the top pros, we're all very in front with our contact point, not necessarily our ready position. When I tell a lot of the people at my clinics, you know, be in front with your contact. Try to hit the volley as far in front as you feel comfortable. They just do this with their ready position. They go as far. That's not what I'm saying. The ready position is, you know, in a relaxed, it's in front, but it's relaxed. It's nothing crazy. But when I'm actually contacting the ball, when I touch that ball, I'm almost all the way out here. I'm very far in front. Makes it way easier for me to get the ball down in my personal experience. Plus, I'm an extra 6 inches or a foot closer to the other person. They have less time to react. So those two things are super important. And being loose. Being as loose as you can possibly be. Loosey-goosey. But also, you don't want to be using so much wrist. So if you're, you know, of course you're using some wrist on your volleys and on your counters. Don't get me wrong. I mean, you're not just rigidly going like this. There's definitely some wrist happening. But sometimes when I tell people to be super loose, they start doing this crazy floppy stuff with their wrist, which I would hope you guys would know not to do, but this podcast is geared towards 3-0s for the most part. This particular episode is, I would say, 3-0s and 3-5s, who really slice the volley. And 3-0s and 3-5s, they do a lot of wild stuff sometimes. So they're a wild bunch, I would say. So anyway, that's pretty much all we got for this podcast. Make sure to tune into my Instagram. We're doing a bunch of like funny posts and a bunch of obviously like free tips. So the new Instagram is James Ignatowicz Coaching. So my name, just James Ignatowicz Coaching. And it's a new Instagram with just free tips almost every few days, just free videos from me. And I'm actually doing a lot of the demonstrations. I know that's one of the, you know, the pet peeves of the people in the comments. Like, James, you never do your demonstrations. You just talk to the camera on the podcast. I'm like, well, yeah, that is what I do because it's easy, okay? I'm sorry. But now I've got like an assistant and a team with the business of clinics and all that. And they're taking videos of me doing all these shots. So on the Instagram now, you will find that I am demonstrating all of the shots and everything that I talk about. It's a lot like this, but you'll see me hitting the shots that I'm talking about. You'll see how I'm doing it right versus how I'm doing it wrong. We have all that comprehensive stuff, James Ignatowicz Coaching Instagram, and the same stuff on my YouTube channel. Just, you know, search James Ignatowicz and you'll find the YouTube channel. Okay, I'm done plugging myself. As usual, I stayed the last minute for that. And that's all we got. Thank you for watching.